Chapter 10. Screech! Suddenly, a car skidded to a stop behind them. Harold heard a door open and the quick thud of steps. Then a man's scream pierced the darkness. Harold scampered to his feet and turned back to see Mr. Harris land a crushing punch into Londell's cheek. His head snapped back with the blow, and he sank to the asphalt. Londell tried to stand, reaching for something in his belt, but Mr. Harris hit him again. His fist struck like a hammer into Londell's jaw. Londell sprawled forward, and a small black handgun slipped from his fingers and slid just a few feet from where Harold and Jupiter were standing. Londell stretched for it, but Mr. Harris grabbed his arm, twisting it up behind his back so he couldn't move.
"Jupe!"
Londell roared, trying to escape.
"Get the gun!"
Jupiter stared at the gun and then at Harold and his brother. Keenan stood in the shadows nearby, his mouth open in disbelief.
"Get it!"
Londell barked.
"Don't listen to him, son," Mr. Harris said firmly. "That's not an answer for you. Your brother's made his choice, but you don't have to go down that road."
"Jupe, he ain't a cop. Get the gun. Do what you gotta do,"
Londell boomed, trying to free himself. Mr. Harris yanked his arm and Londell shrieked in pain. Jupiter flinched at the sound, stepping forward slightly. His face was twisted in agony, his eyes on the gun. Harold saw his hand reach out then, the jagged line of his scar faintly visible in the darkness. A police siren wailed in the distance.
"Don't do it, Jupe,"
Harold said, moving in front of Jupiter, blocking his path.
"It don't have to be this way. We used to be in school together, bro. We still can be. Get the gun!"
Jupiter stared into Harold's face, studied his bloodied nose and swollen eyes. He shook his head sadly.
"It's all wrong. It ain't supposed to be like this. He's my brother."
"Shoot him!"
Londell struggled to break Mr. Harris's grip. The siren grew louder.
"Go home, Jupe,"
Mr. Harris said, pinning Londell against his car.
"Working out here is a game you can't win. You'll end up dead before you're 25. I've seen too much of that. Just walk away while you still can.
Shoot him!"
"Come on, Jupe,"
Keenan urged.
"Let's get out of here."
Jupiter sighed and glanced at Harold. His eyes were swollen and teary, a look that reminded Harold of years earlier when they were just two boys on the school playground.
"I'll take care of Mama,"
Jupiter said to Londell, and then he turned and disappeared into the darkness with Keenan. Londell slumped to his knees in defeat as two police cars raced into the park toward them. An hour later, for the second time in his life, Harold drove home with Mr. Harris.
"The police are going to need a statement from you," he explained. "I'll take you down to the station once you get cleaned up."
"What's going to happen?"
Harold asked.
"Londell's going to do hard time," Mr. Harris replied gravely. "The police said they've been building a case against him for a drive-by shooting last year, and now he's got drugs and weapons charges. Barely 20 years old, and he's looking at years behind bars. It's sad, but it could have been a lot worse," Mr. Harris added, looking at Harold.
"How did you find me?" Harold asked.
"You can thank Cindy for that. She told us where you were. Your grandma called the police right away, but I wasn't going to wait for them," Mr. Harris said, shaking his head. "Glad I didn't."
I don't know how to thank you," Harold stammered. "You could have been killed."
"It's fine, Harold," he said with a deep sigh. "I've risked my life for much less."
At home, Harold opened the door to see Grandma and Cindy sitting on the edge of the couch, their hands clasped tightly together. In the kitchen was the stack of bills Harold had read. The letter from Family Services was there, too. Harold could see that Grandma had been looking at them.
"Oh, my goodness, Harold,"
Cindy cried, glancing at his nose and then hugging him.
"Are you okay?"
"Yeah,"
he answered softly, putting his arm around her for the first time.
"Come over here, Harold,"
Grandma snapped. Harold stepped away from Cindy and sat next to Grandma, hanging his head in shame.
"I'm so sorry,"
he whispered, preparing to hear her yell at him.
"I deserve it," he thought. "I deserve whatever punishment she gives me."
Grandma grabbed him and pressed his head to her shoulder, holding him so tightly he could barely breathe.
"Oh, my child,"
she repeated, rocking him like she did when he was a young boy.
"Don't you know how much I love you? I would give my life for you, child. I would give my life before I let someone take you away from me."
Harold's eyes filled with tears.
"You're not mad?"
he asked softly, lifting his head.
"Of course I'm mad," she said sternly. "You could have gotten yourself killed."
Then her voice became tender.
"But I didn't realize how frightened you've been these past few weeks, worrying about money and that damn letter from Family Services."
"What letter?" Mr. Harris asked.
"On the table," she replied with a sigh. "Harold, those hospital bills, most of them are covered by our insurance, and whatever's left, I'll manage to pay it off over time."
"But you said we had no money," Harold cried.
"You said..." "I said you should let me worry about how we're going to pay the bills. Why didn't you talk to me about this?" "Yes, money's tight right now, but we'll be fine. We'll be just fine. Haven't I always taken care of you?"
"What about the letter? If something happens to you, they're going to take me away." Grandma sighed.
"Nothing's going to happen to me, Harold. I'm okay. No one's going to take you anywhere."
"But you're sick," he cried, jumping up from the couch. "What if you go back to the hospital? What if you get worse?" Mr. Harris stood in front of the kitchen table, listening carefully. A look of concern spread across his face as he read over the letter. Grandma sighed.
I don't know," she admitted, her eyes moist. "I suppose I've been avoiding this conversation."
"He could stay with me," Cindy offered.
"It doesn't work that way, sweetie," Grandma declared.
Suddenly, Mr. Harris marched across the room and grabbed a pen from their coffee table. Then he walked back into the kitchen, and without saying a word, he signed the form.
"Marcus, stop it," Grandma yelled. "I can't ask you to do that. You've done enough for this family, more than it was fair of us to ask."
"Mrs. Rose," he said calmly, "I came back to this neighborhood for a reason. I grew up here without a father, just like Harold. I've had my struggles, too. You're gonna be fine, and Harold doesn't need to worry about losing you for a long, long time. But if putting my name on that form will ease his fears, if I can offer him a little comfort, then that's fine by me."
Cindy jumped up and threw her arms around Mr. Harris's waist.
"Okay, okay," he said, patting her head.
Harold was stunned. With one move of the pen, Mr. Harris had changed his world forever. It was a miracle.
I don't know what to say," Harold stammered, his eyes welling up.
"Just learn from this, Harold," he replied, opening the door to leave. "You're worth fighting for, son. Don't you ever forget that."
Mr. Harris's words nearly knocked Harold over. The events of the past few weeks had filled him with shame and made him hate what he'd become. And yet, despite his mistakes, there were people still there for him. Together, they had pulled him back from a sea of trouble and rescued him when he thought it was impossible. He owed each of them a debt he wasn't sure he could repay. But he would try. Harold was sure of that. The invisible chains that held him were suddenly broken. And for the first time he could remember, his spirit soared free.
This has been a Townsend Press production from the Bluefoot series of books. No Way Out, written by Peggy Kern, read by Jameel Gaines. This book was produced by Audiobright and features the music of Kenyon Whittington. For more information, visit our website at townsendpress.com.